T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. 97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
All right, welcome back. Hey, the Cardinals' big winners, Albert with a grand slam. He's at 690. And Matt Pauly from the KMOX side and the Cardinals Radio Network is going to give us an update here in just a couple of minutes. We have an audio cut of the day. But let's talk about the affidavit and what happened today. Listen to James Carville, though, first on the raid.
This Mar-a-Lago story, which might be the biggest story since 9/11. That's not going anywhere.
Right.
All
right.
Well, not going anywhere. And you're a Republican candidate. Well, if you're a Democrat, you're going to get asked about inflation. If you're a Republican, you're going to get asked about Trump.
It's the biggest story since 9/11. To hear that is nuts. Ilya Shapiro is with us, the director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute. Welcome back, Ilya. What's your reaction to that? That's an interesting take, ranking the news stories, isn't it? Oop. He's not there quite yet. I thought he was there. See, I'm introing a guest who isn't quite there, which is always a little bit dangerous, unfortunately.
Hang on, Abby's looking.
Well, here's the bottom line. So we've had some phone issues today, yeah, unfortunately. And what's been happening is that we were trying to, you know, call guests, and then guests have to call us just to get on the line. So it's been a little tricky here for Abby. She's been trying to do her best, and Fred scrambling around to get people on. I think I have. No, Ilya, okay. Are you there? How are you this afternoon?
I am, yeah.
Well, what happened today with this? So the judge seemingly said, yeah, this is something that the public has an interest in and they should see, but maybe not all of it. We're going to mark it up, redact it. But he even admits a redaction might, you know, render it pretty much useless. So what's your take on what happened and what happens from here?
Well, the proof will be in the pudding of what exactly is released. It's an unusual situation all around. So we're running in open field here, in the sense that normally, of course, you would not release an affidavit or a warrant application during the pendency of a criminal investigation. Of course you wouldn't. This isn't the typical case. Searching a former president's home is not the typical case. And so, the Justice Department is kind of in a tricky situation because they're, from the beginning of this, there's been this drip. There's been this put up or shut up kind of situation where, to justify this escalation of executing a search warrant on a former president, which is why Attorney General Garland agonized over it over a long time. You don't do this over a run of the mill situation, or even mishandling classified documents. Clearly, they're searching for something more, and perhaps that's in this affidavit that's being sought. Well, there's going to be a battle over the redaction, clearly,
yeah,
the Justice Department.
Well, because
Department is gonna submit, yeah.
On the one hand, you're probably going to have, look, the Trump side seemingly wants this stuff out there, and they don't want a lot of redactions, or maybe they do, but then they're going to say that it doesn't reveal enough. But it's my understanding, you can weigh in on this, is that, look, it's not, and maybe address this a little bit in your comments, but releasing a search warrant affidavit before an indictment, that's rather irregular, isn't it?
It is. It is. Releasing the warrant itself and the list of items seized, as happened last week, that's unusual as well. It's not that there's no downside for Donald Trump either, because if this is fully released unredacted, forgetting what, you know, interest on the Justice Department side might be compromised, this might not make him look good at all. So, you know, it's a risk on both sides, highly unusual situation. And, you know, there's going to be this battle between the judge and the Justice Department. And remember that Donald Trump has been, you know, on Truth Social, he's been issuing statements about how he wants everything released. But
right.
his lawyers have not actually filed any papers in this hearing. This is between news organizations and other third parties that want to get at the information, arguing about the public's right to know, et cetera, versus the Justice Department. So, you know, very, very unusual situation. And everybody's obviously taking it seriously, and it's going slow. And the thing is, the longer this drags on, the longer critics of the raid are vindicated because, you know, whatever the sensitivities of the criminal investigation are, the Justice Department needs to resolve it sooner rather than later, or it makes itself look bad.
Well, yeah, and to that point, so the judge wants this by next Thursday at noon, but then that doesn't mean that the redacted affidavit is going to be released the next day or anything like that. It could take a while. Then you get into this territory. I want your opinion on this, because if there's going to be information released, well, the timing of this is going to get closer and closer to the election in November.
Sure. Absolutely. But I don't think we're talking about a release the week before the election. What it could be driving to is a decision by the Justice Department whether to prosecute right on the eve of the election. That's what drawing out these preliminary skirmishes really is doing. So, yeah, I mean, this is almost like a redux of 2016 with Jim Comey talking about Hillary Clinton's mishandling of information and won't he then reopening the investigation and Anthony Weiner's laptop and all of this. So this could take some twists and turns yet.
So the Justice Department lawyer, to is my understanding that they make the case, and some of this might be legitimate. They say, look, we can't release this because you got witnesses that could be harmed. Some witnesses might not cooperate. You have national security interests and all that. Did the judge just say this is too important and that, or basically, okay, that might be true, but that's why we're going through the redactions?
That's exactly it, what you just said. I don't see a justification for the whole thing to remain under seal. You made some valid points, Justice Department. Let's see you in good faith make your redactions. I mean, it's a tricky thing. If the Justice Department comes out and, like, submits, you know, completely blacked out pages, the judge isn't going to like that. If they're going to, you know, have three words that are not blocked out on a given page, the judge isn't going to want that. So, you know, blocking out witnesses' names or references to, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, military movements or whatever the sensitive national security issues might be, that's one thing. But just, you know, blocking out whole paragraphs like you see in some, you know, satires of how the CIA operates or what have you, that's not going to fly.
So you have a lot of cheerleading on the left, the MSNBC crowd, but even maybe beyond that this is going to result in Trump being in an orange jumpsuit. And I've seen several people on the left have raised the case of Reality Winner. Reality Winner was the Air Force intelligence specialist, and she was given 5 years in prison for leaking this intelligence report about Russian interference in the elections. 5 years, 3 months for doing that. So what the left is saying right now, look, That's what she got for holding on to documents. This is on parallel with that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, General Petraeus, the former state CIA director, got probation and a fine for mishandling classified information. It wasn't a leak. He just disclosed it to his mistress or took it home as
right.
he wasn't supposed to. You know, it depends what is done with the materials. If he's just being reckless and taking it home, that's one thing. If he's giving it to our enemies, that's another. So, they're not exactly similar situations, but look, if the Justice Department makes a move to prosecute, to, you know, arrest Donald Trump, that is going to be significant. There's going to be rioting, which isn't to say that we can't, you know, it shouldn't be done, but those are obviously the considerations that are going through Merrick Garland's mind as he is pursuing it.
Do you think he just went rogue on this deal?
No, I mean, he's a thoughtful guy and he's never been, I think it can't be that all of that they're looking for here is mishandling of classified information.
I wouldn't think
that's
so.
That's Hillary Clinton.
Right,
situation.
Right.
I think that he must have been convinced that there is more to it, whether it relates to January 6th and incitement of riots there or something even beyond that we haven't been talking about these last 2 weeks. I don't know, but it has to be has to be something serious, more serious than that. Otherwise, the Justice Department looks not just like politically, you know, motivated, illegitimate actors, but they look like fools at that point. So, I mean, there has to be something more.
Ilya Shapiro, thank you so much. I appreciate weighing in. Director of Constitutional Studies now at the Manhattan Institute. We'll see where this takes us. Thank you, Ilya.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Have a great weekend. 5:16. I have to shift into something else here. And I was at lunch earlier today with my friends from Banner Construction at Brio, and my phone came up with an alert early. And I think it was 3-0 Cardinals, relatively early, maybe even in the first inning. And then I look and I see 10-0 at some point. Like, what happened? Well, this is what happened.
6-0 here, Cardinals, and the pitch to Pujols is hit deep down the left field line towards the wall, and it is gone! A grand slam for Albert Pujols! Pujols hits number 690.
Holy cow.
What a great moment here at the ballpark as Pujols delivers. And this crowd is going crazy.
I mean, this is amazing. Matt Pauly is in with us from the Camo X sign on the Cardinals Radio Network. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, maybe you and I even talked about this about a week ago. If he's going to get to 700, you got to kind of put a little streak together, maybe 3 or 4 in 1 week, and that's exactly what's happened. And why don't you throw in 2 of those being grand salamis, right?
Yeah. Woo! So that's his first ever pinch hit grand slam in his career, which is incredible. The fact that it happened in the third inning, I don't think we're making enough of a big deal about this. Oliver Marmol went to his bench in the third inning.
Yeah, so, really, Matt, this is one of the reasons I wanted you to come in here, because I didn't know what happened. So the bases were loaded, and who was supposed to come up? Brendan Donovan?
Yeah, and the Rockies had started a right-hander, but then he got injured. Sensatella, he got injured on a play at first where he turned his ankle. So then they went to Gomber, a lefty, and Pujols has just been killing lefties. So they... They went to pool.
So that was Austin Gomber who dished that up to him?
Yep, it was.
Former Cardinal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is fantastic. And then they scored what? How did they score the other 3 runs? Was there a home run early also, or was that just?
It was later. So Newt Barr hit a home run in the 6th inning. Later in the game, it was a 2-run home run, and then they scored another run. So it was 5-0 going into that inning. They got 1 run to make it 6-0. Pujols, the grand slam, makes it 10-0. Newt Barr's home run, I think, was a 2-run shot, and then they got another run in there as well.
Well, wow. So, but outside of 700, which this is going to be fun because now it's somewhat possible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's within reach. It's still not going to be easy, but you have to think about putting Albert in this lineup, not for home runs only. He's hitting the ball all the time.
451 in the last like month or something,
nuts.
Which is the best among any player on the roster. And you've got you've got the MVP and Paul Goldschmidt on the roster, and you have Nolan Arenado who's putting up MVP like numbers, and it's Albert Pujols over the last month or so who's been swinging it better than anybody.
You know, we in sports we talk a lot about maybe teams peaking too early. The only reason I'm a little nervous is I wish that in 2 weeks was October and not in 6 weeks, because you gotta keep things together. But one thing that the Cardinals are doing right now, and Matt just moved here from the Milwaukee area doing work for the Brewers, they're slipping away. They lost to the Dodgers, so they're what now, 3.5 games out?
It's then they won today.
Oh, they win. So it's 3.
It's 3.
Okay, it's still 3.
Yeah, but they've got, I don't know who they have for the next 3, but then they have the Dodgers again for 3. They're in a stretch of 7 of 10 games against the Dodgers, where the Cardinals, their opponent winning percentage from here to the end of the season is like .443. It's the second worst winning percentage for any team in Major League Baseball. They've got the second easiest schedule.
Still makes me nervous, though.
I know.
I hear things like that only because
teams
love to play spoilers, and you just don't know what's going to happen. I don't even know. Who do we have this weekend?
Diamondbacks for 3.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
In Arizona.
Right.
Yep.
And they're not very good right now,
no,
are they?
No.
Yeah. Well, this is fun, isn't it? And last night was a great game. And the way that Goldschmidt is just knocking the cover off the ball, too. He's just in different territory.
There's no break in this lineup right now. I mean, we talk about Goldschmidt and Arenado, but they're getting contributions really 1 through 9. Molina is still a little hit or miss in terms of actually hitting. But whether it's Newt Barr, Gorman, or Donovan, O'Neill, and they're winning in different ways. They had the game the other day where Tyler O'Neill gets hit by a pitch twice. The first time it leads to Goldschmidt getting a sacrifice
hit by
flag,
pitch,
and then
right?
the walk-off later. So they're finding different ways to win. So Wainwright today, 7 scoreless innings, Pujols the grand slam. First time in Major League Baseball history that a 40-year-old has hit a grand slam and a 40-year-old has thrown 7 shutout innings in the same game.
Listen to
those
stats.
Oh, that gave me goosebumps.
And how about Waino coming back? Has he, only given up one run in his last two appearances, or no runs?
I'd have to look.
Because he gave up.
You're right. It's in that neighborhood. Yeah.
Right. He gave up all those runs in Colorado, but then he came back over the weekend, was lights out, obviously, in that game that they lost. But I didn't even remember if he gave.
I think he gave up one run in the ninth inning in that game,
something like that. Yeah. Well, it's certainly a team that's in a much different position than we were a year ago. September was magical for the Cardinals, as you know, but you know we always kind of knew at that point that this was a team that probably wasn't good enough to compete in the postseason. I think there's a big difference right now. And the front office folks that we love to criticize, right?
Mm-hmm.
We love to be crabby about them. They look kind of brilliant here with Quintana and Montgomery, don't they?
They do. And let me throw something else at you that's not getting talked about a lot. Major League Baseball just released the postseason format for this year.
Oh, okay.
And with them adding the wild card round, which is three games, and them getting into the postseason late because of the lockout, they have eliminated some off days. So what that means is generally in the postseason, you really need three starters, and occasionally there's a fourth starter or a bullpen game. You're going to have to legitimately need four starters this year in the postseason because of the off days that are gone. And the Cardinals' rotation is so much deeper now because of those two additions. I think it really puts them in a better position with this playoff format.
So help me out with the playoff format because I'm a little confused by it from this standpoint in the first round in the wild card game. So if the Cardinals, let's say it's the Mets, the Dodgers, and the Cardinals, which is where it stands right now, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken, right? And then it would be the Braves. Who else would be a wild card? Probably the Brewers.
The Phillies and the Padres. The Brewers are out right now.
Oh, they are. All right. Yep. So they would have to maybe win the division. So the first round, the Cardinals would play in the first round?
They would because they have the third best division winning record.
So who gets the bye, essentially?
The top two division leading teams. So the top three seeds are your division winners. The top two are the ones with the best records.
But the difference now is, and again, Matt, I get so many things wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong.
I get things wrong, too. I'm very good at getting things wrong.
I'm excellent at that. But the series, it would be, if they have to play a wild card series, it would be here because they're division winners in three games here, right?
Yeah, yes. And so I had somebody actually call about this on the post-game show yesterday. When, why is KMOX not talking about the fact that they passed by the Phillies in record? Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The Phillies aren't going to win that division. So the wild card team can have the second best record in all of baseball. It doesn't matter. If they're a wild card team, the division winning team gets the home
That's
field.
That's why it's so important to win that division.
Yep.
And this is what it's all about. And you can see that this team is rather focused on a goal. Because I as much as everyone's going to root for Albert to get 700 home runs, I think the fans, the team and everyone, they're focused on the postseason. This is really, there's the potential here for this to be quite magical.
There is that possibility. And the romance of baseball, more so than any other sport, it just seems like, and watch them get knocked out in the wild card round, but it just seems
things happen.
This is really setting up for something special.
Oh, we hope so.
Yeah.
I know. Let's not jinx it, though. All right, Matt Pauly, that is awesome. Thanks for coming in and giving us the latest here. What a great afternoon and really great series. I mean, you had to against the Rockies, right? You got to take advantage of this, and hopefully it'll continue into the weekend. Thank you, Matt.
You bet.
Appreciate it. 524, not 424. 524, 97.1 FM Talk. We'll talk about Liz Cheney, her future, all these other things. Victoria Marshall with the Federalist coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Don't forget, we're heading to Spain next year. You can go to defineddestinations.com, get all the details on the trip. I've also pinned details at the top of my Twitter page, which is at Mark Reardon KFTK. We have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Jane Duker will be here. State reps Nick Schroer, who will likely be a state senator because he won his primary, Donna Behringer, also here in the 3 o'clock hour. Oh, Glenn McCoy, who is a brilliant cartoonist. He used to do great political cartoons. Glenn's work can be seen in a lot of animated movies, including the new Despicable Me movie or the new Minions movie, and he's fantastic, and we'll have a great conversation with him. We have an audio cut of the day coming up in this hour before the end. And right now, Victoria Marshall, who is with The Federalist, wrote about Liz Cheney. I think I have some Liz Cheney sound. Here's what she said when she got crushed the other night.
That's a decision that I'm going to make in the coming months, Savannah. I'm not going to make any announcements here this morning, but it is something that I'm thinking about, and I'll make a decision in the coming months.
Oh, yeah, that was that comical question about whether or not she's going to run for president from Savannah Guthrie at the Today Show. Victoria Marshall with us this afternoon. Hi, Victoria. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. You know, you wrote a great column here, and I don't have anything personally against, Lynn Cheney, but I was talking about this yesterday, and I got a message from, actually, it was a former member of Congress that thought that, you know, and this is a case that's been made about integrity, right? That she's faced with choices here, and she picked the path of integrity. And my response was, I get it. And, you know, in the past, I've been no fan of President Trump's behavior. I'll separate it out, you know, when it comes to behavior or January 6th. But in my mind, there's integrity, and then there's, okay, we get it. You've made your point. You know, shut the you-know-what up, and let's move forward. And that's sort of my position on Liz Cheney and all this stuff with January 6th as well. But you're making the case, Victoria, that, look, she's not a martyr here, and she's not a hero, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't see what bashing Trump, you know, 24/7 has to do with integrity. I mean, Liz Cheney has failed her constituents, Wyomingites. I mean, what do Wyomingites care about? They care about inflation. They care about high energy and gas prices. They care about conservative values. And Wyoming went, you know, overwhelmingly for Trump. They like Trump. And to have a, you know, their representative just continually bash him day in and day out with those January 6th, you know, House committee show trials, they just did not feel represented. So she should have lost. So I mean, she's been treated like, with kid gloves by the media and by Democrats.
Well, yeah, that's because they love her.
They're parodying the line that they want.
Yeah, she's
their
hero.
It's like she hasn't earned anything. I mean, they called her a martyr. The New York Times called her a martyr for what? For not representing your constituents and doing, you know, attending to their needs, basically.
Victoria, you had a great quote in here. I had not seen this yet, but so, and maybe this was on CNN, I guess. So she talks about upholding the rule of law and defending the Constitution. Then there's a guy from Wyoming named Brett Coopy, who's a voter. And he says, if that was the rule of law, why doesn't Trump have a defense team in the courtroom, right? That ain't the rule of law. That's a kangaroo court. That's not the Wyoming way. Pretty hard to defend that, I think.
Uh-huh, exactly. I mean, that just shows how the voters are feeling. So I love that quote because it just got right to the heart of the issue.
Where do you think this is all taking? I mean, let's go back to the soundbite that I just played. For the Washington Post put a headline in there about her maybe running for president. This is a disservice to their readers in not being honest to tell them that Liz Cheney has no chance in hell of winning a presidential primary on the Republican side, right?
Yeah, I mean, that would just be a suicide mission, kind of like a kamikaze mission where she obviously would not win, but I think their idea is she would be able to take Trump down with her, which I don't think that would be able to happen because I think Trump is popular enough that he could survive that. Because obviously Liz Cheney is not popular with Republicans. I mean, she lost by 37 points in Wyoming alone. I mean, and probably lost by more points if Democrats hadn't, you know, switched parties to vote for her.
In the meantime, she's making a fair amount of money. I don't know personally, but there are a lot of donors that are saying, go Liz Cheney from the left, aren't there?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she had, so left-wing donors came out in droves to fill her campaign coffers, basically for this first primary election. That's what the New York Times reported. From Texas alone, she received $950,000 from left-wing big donors. She raised triple the amount of her opponent, Harriet Hageman. So she had $15 million, I believe, and Harriet Hageman raised $3 million. So that's, I mean, there's a lot of outside money that went into this primary. She only raised, I think, a couple $100,000 in Wyoming alone, but it was all just big money, big dark money from outside of Wyoming funding this race.
But what's the end game here? I mean, I remember saying from the beginning, it looks like she's going to want a book deal and she's probably going to get that. She's already worth, you said she's worth, what, $15 million already. So I don't know how much financial incentive there is.
you know, I don't know. I mean, she's just going to keep making money. She probably has a couple book deals that are in the works right now. She's going to be going on a speaking tour, you know, just saying, telling people what they want to hear about Orange Man Bad. Probably be on the board of the American Enterprise Institute or, you know, some sort of defense contractor.
The Lincoln Project. You're missing the Lincoln Project, Victoria.
Oh, exactly.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's just, you know, it's the Cheney dynasty just wanting to continue to be in power. I really don't know what her end game is, but people, Democrats like her because they can be like, hey, she's a Republican, but she hates Trump, which, Democrats love Trump because they can run on Trump and they think they can win by saying Orange Man Bad all the time. And if they have a Republican saying that, then they like them.
Oh, yeah, they can't wait for him to, I mean, look at CNN. They fired Brian Stelter today, and they need ratings, right? They need to make more money, so they want him back for sure. Victoria Marshall is here. She's with the Federalist. What was your take then today? We spent a little time earlier, certainly on the show, about the affidavit and the potential release, and I guess we're going to have some redactions. Let's talk about that end game. Where is that going to take us? Any thoughts?
You know, I have no idea. I have not been following that enough to give a good conclusion or I'm not even comfortable commenting on that.
Well, because I don't think you have to be embarrassed by that just because it's hard to know exactly what's going on here. It really is.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a lot of the answers. And I think on the one side, you have all the people that you just mentioned that hate Trump and they are rooting for him to be, you know, in a jail cell. I played this earlier and I don't know if you heard that this is James Carville. And he, you know, he's usually full of hyperbole, and I've appreciated him for decades saying goofy things, the Raging Cajun. But listen to this.
This Mar-a-Lago story, which might be the biggest story since 9/11. That's not going anywhere.
He thinks it's the biggest story since 9/11. And then, you know, we played a montage the other day, a bunch of the MSNBC types and everything cheering this on, saying, and I see this on Facebook, too, with people who don't like Trump, that they are convinced that this means... maybe it will mean this. I don't know that he's heading to prison. So that might be a little optimistic. Victoria, thank you so much. I appreciate coming on here this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Audio cut of the day still to come. Let me play this. You know, on the one hand, you have Carville saying that, and then I have to have some appreciation and respect for him as well, because not unlike Jane and some of the other sane Democrats that are on this show, he says this about the AOC wing of the party. Well, I got to make sure I play it. Here we go.
We tend to get defined by some overeducated, totally doofus coastal elites that are out trying to write dictionaries or something unrelated to anybody's life. These people have the ability to irritate. They have the ability to come up with really stupid things like defund the police.
Well, he's not wrong about that.
No, right? he is not.
He's definitely wrong about the biggest story since 9/11. I don't even know if it would rank in the top 10 if you start thinking about significant things that, you know, there's a worldwide pandemic that might rate a little higher than the raid on Mar-a-Lago. But the, you know, the criticism, what would you call that? Just the absolute accurate, you know, take on the squad and the left-wing progressives, I think, is to be appreciated. But he comes from... look, it's been said about Republicans, and maybe this is true, that Ronald Reagan might not even be comfortable in this party or he couldn't win a primary because of where the party's gone. But let's face it, James Carville worked with Bill Clinton, who at this point looks like a Republican compared to what we're experiencing in Washington. So if you're not caught up on the news of the day, what happened is the judge took this under consideration about the affidavit and said, yes, I think this is something that the public should take a look at and they will have an opportunity to do that. However, we're going to redact it. So what's happening is he says, Bruce Reinhardt is his name. On my initial careful review, there are portions of it that can be unsealed, right? The judge said that he would give the government a full and fair opportunity to make redactions to the document, ordered them to turn in the redacted version by noon next Thursday, along with a legal memo justifying the proposed redactions. He said he would then review the document, either order its release, or if he agrees with the redaction, or hold a closed-door hearing with the government if he disagrees. The judge says if they can't agree, obviously I'd win that argument. I do like that. But he allowed the government to appeal the ruling. Now, what that means is, and let me have Brett Baer sort of explain this, is that don't expect that the document's going to be submitted. The redactions are there. And then next weekend on Friday by the roundtable, we're going to be talking what's in the affidavit.
Next Thursday is a long time for a filing from the DOJ about what the redactions would look like. And you've already seen, as you mentioned, that foreshadowing from DOJ filing that they believe that the affidavit itself would be marked out so much that it essentially would be a black piece of paper. So you have the former president saying it should all go out. But we should point out, in court, the Trump lawyers did not file a motion for that purpose. They didn't do that. They didn't have to, but they could have had that choice to file a motion. They didn't. The judge says he's not inclined to unseal the entire affidavit, and so he wants to see from the Justice Department what exactly those redactions are, and he says specifically, be prepared to explain the redactions and defend them.
Yeah, that's a good explanation there. And he also said that he understands that redactions, I mean, just think of a piece of paper that, you know, has been released and it's got a bunch of Sharpie lines.
Looks like
it.
A big, yeah,
right.
Sharpie.
So he even said that he knows that redactions can sometimes be so extensive as to turn a document into, his words here, meaningless gibberish. Now, the government, this is what they said. This is via Politico and Kyle Chaney, who's the reporter, that the Justice Department argued after looking at this that the redactions necessary to mitigate harms to the integrity of the investigation would be so extensive as to render the remaining unsealed text devoid of meaningful context, and the release of such a redacted version would not serve any public interest. Nevertheless, should the court order partial unsealing of the affidavit, the government respectfully requests an opportunity to provide the court with proposed redactions, which is kind of what's happening right now. Now, the Trump side is considering something else. And I guess there have been some divisions about this. Here's the reporting this afternoon on that. Some allies of former President Donald Trump are urging him to publicly release surveillance footage of FBI agents executing the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. I guess maybe CNN is reporting this, so take it with a grain of salt. They say some of Trump's aides and allies have encouraged the former president to make some of the footage available to the public, believing it could send a jolt of energy through the Republican Party's base. One person familiar with the conversation said there have been discussions about featuring the August footage in campaign-style ads, believing the footage could bolster Trump's claims of political persecution. A second Trump ally, who spoke to CNN on the condition of anonymity, has also encouraged the former president's team to make the footage public, telling CNN it would drive the base blanking bananas to see FBI agents milling around Mar-a-Lago while President Trump was out of town. Here's the part that I'm missing here, because this story says that there were split. You know, I guess that some people are divided. I don't see any, you know, indication that anyone's divided on that particular issue. So we'll see what they do. I'm not sure what the options in releasing the video. That could be very interesting, though, for sure. 5:43, audio cut of the day coming up. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you weren't here in the 4 o'clock hour, you missed a Hall of Fame legendary edition of The Price is Wrong with George Gray, who is on The Price is Right with Drew Carey. But it was a lot of fun. You can always use the Odyssey rewind button if you download the app, you go to the podcast, and you can rewind up to 24 hours. I would say that this was a good one today with George, although he wasn't in person. That was the only downside. He was checking in from California because they are back taping The Price is Right. He indicated, Sue, that what he had worked 3 days this week, right? So he
needed air conditioning.
Yeah, he needed a break. So we're sending prayers and good wishes to George out in California. Reardon Roundtable tomorrow, a lot to talk about. I do have a very specific audio cut of the day that's pretty easy to telegraph here this afternoon, but I wanted to squeeze a couple more things in. We've been talking about a lot of these issues, including the Inflation Reduction Act, and where is this guy from? I can't remember. I'm going to look this up. Congressman Jim Banks, and he said something that kind of resonated with me here. Where is he from? Indiana. Jim Banks, Indiana. This is what he said about the Inflation Reduction Act.
It should be illegal to name a bill something that it doesn't do.
Amen.
And this is one of many cases where the Democrats get away with this. Go back and think about from bills like the Affordable Care Act to the Inflation Reduction Act. This is misleading to the American people. And there should be a rule in Congress that makes it against the rules of the House or the Senate to do what the Democrats have done this time again.
I like that, you know?
Yes.
Because I'm glad that he mentioned the Affordable Care Act, because that's kind of comical, too. But this one's even worse.
I mean, worse.
Even people on the other side, they have to admit. Even Kate Baldwin, it's, you know, CNN, they've said, you know, they can only sell their souls so much when it comes to some of this stuff. I played this earlier, but I do think it's an important issue. Glenn Youngkin, the Virginia governor, is pushing back because his Department of Education, his woke Department of Education in Virginia, is trying to strike George Washington as the father of our country on statewide tests. Washington and fellow founding father, President James Madison, were facing the chopping block, according to two of the proposals. They would have struck the title of father of our country and Madison's dub of the father of our Constitution from the state standard learning exams because they are white supremacists.
And I want to be very clear. I want us to teach all of our history in Virginia, the good and the bad. This is the moment for us to take a really, really serious look at how we are teaching this most important topic.
Well, it's ridiculous, and he's right. And there is not, for those people out there, and when your liberal friends tell you, well, Republicans, you're just trying to make sure that people don't know about the truth about American history. You tell them that's actually not true. We've never, ever opposed any telling of the Tulsa race massacre or anything along those lines, go for it. What we don't like is indoctrination, teaching kids to hate America. And by pulling out, you know, phrasing like this about Washington and Matt, what is the point there? There's no educational point to that, right? Who are you trying to protect? People who, I don't know, what kids, you just want to send the message that the founding fathers were racist, white supremacists, and that they stole the country from Native Americans. That's what they want to teach. So I can't believe it's actually the Department of Education in Virginia that's, you know, going down that path. But in fact, they are.
We just want the facts out there, and then you can decide, right? Just present the history. And that's what you do. Well, you don't lean one way or the other. You just present the facts.
I can say, and I haven't been in school in a long time, right? 40 years. But I think that some of us could probably take a step back and agree that the history that we learned when we were younger isn't thorough enough. But we're not talking about that. That's the problem. They're not trying to, I mean, they're claiming that Republicans and conservatives, that's all they want to do. But there isn't any of that. There's nobody, Glenn Youngkin, Mike Parson, I'd challenge anyone on the left to name one person who's saying, don't teach this, don't teach this. And we're not saying that.
No.
What we're saying is don't indoctrinate and don't teach things in a way to make people hate this country, which is part of the goal. So I think it's outrageous when these things happen. And luckily, Glenn Youngkin is a guy that can fight back, and that's one of the reasons that he was elected. But I thought that was interesting. And one more topic here, because we did address this with Dr. Marty McCary earlier. You know, they're redoing these CDC guidelines because they've screwed things up so much. So the CDC is going back and saying, okay, maybe we need to do things differently.
We learned some hard lessons over the last 3 years. And as part of that, it's my responsibility, it's the agency's responsibility to learn from those lessons and do better.
So that's Rochelle Walensky. Here's Rand Paul, Senator Paul.
It wasn't that they acted too sparingly. The problem was that they acted too quickly and not based on science. If they want to reorganize, it's humility. I think they need to step back and get back into the advice game, not the mandate game.
Think about this more in broader terms here with the CDC, with the FBI, with the Supreme Court. Look at all of our institutions. There's no level of trust anymore. And for justifiable reasons. I don't know how the CDC ever gets back on track, because I think that they've tarnished their reputation so much and not looked at the reality of what's happened. And it's too late at this point to get that back. The FBI, maybe the jury's still out. I don't know. Who else did I mention there? Sue, I mentioned something else. The Supreme Court.
Yes.
And it's not because of the members of the Supreme Court, but I'd still go back to this. Why in the hell can we not find the leaker? We're talking about redacting an affidavit and deciding whether this is something that the country should hear about. I think the country needs to know who leaked the draft of the Dobbs decision. And it shouldn't be too difficult to figure that out. But apparently, no one's asking those questions anymore.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, quite the day. I telegraphed my audio cut of the day. I can't get away from this because the Cardinals won 13-0. They swept the series against the Rockies. The Brewers did win today, so the lead in the division remains 3 games. It was up to 3.5 games, but the Brewers won. Albert Pujols is on fire. How about, I want to go back and collect all those Twitter comments about the Cardinals just taking back a washed-up player, and this is just for the show, yada, yada, yada. I don't think any of us could have predicted how well it's turning out, and this is what happened in the third inning. And he was a pinch hitter because a lefty came in. You got to give a little credit to the manager, the skipper, Ollie Marmol, making a great decision.
6-0 here, Cardinals, and the pitch to Pujols is hit deep down the left field line towards the wall, and it is gone! A grand slam for Albert Pujols! Pujols hits number 690. What a great moment here at the ballpark as Pujols delivers, and this crowd is going crazy. It is now 10-0 Cardinals.
Yeah, 13-0 was the final. That's Ricky Horton with the call on the Cardinals Radio Network. And he was hesitant on the call. He was very cautious, wisely, because that ball didn't get blasted up into Big Mac land. It barely made it out. It was like maybe the first or second row. But it did. It was a line drive. He just smashed it, right?
That's
but
awesome.
But another grand slam, number 690. You know, I want to talk about home run 700, but I'd rather talk about a world championship forward here. Here we go. Hey, by the way, Audio Cut of the Day is sponsored by my friends at the Good Feet Store. It's all about comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief.
Get more at 971talk.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.